"Perhaps they are the same rumours I've heard," the king said. "That Lucia is a powerful sorceress, one who has reduced many villages across Mitica to ash. She is a demon I summoned from the Darklands 17 years ago to help me strengthen my rule."
"Like I said," Lord Gareth watched the king as he stood up from the throne and began to descend the stairs again.
"The rumors of peasants."
"A demon, am I?" Lucia said under her breath, tasting the word and not finding it as unpleasant as she would have thought. People feared demons. She had quickly learned that fear was a very useful tool.
"Your Majesty,"
Lord Gareth said, shaking his head,
"I am your humble servant, as always. I sense that you are unhappy with Curtis, and perhaps with me as well. Please, tell me how we can make amends."
The king's face was a mask, showing no hint of his emotions beneath.
"Your Majesty, you say? As if you haven't pledged your devotion to Amara and only Amara."
"Only words, Your Highness. Do you think she would have let me stay here without such a promise? But I have no doubt your power will be restored now that she has departed these shores."
"So you admit that you're a liar," Lucia said. He frowned at her.
"I admit no such thing."
"Where is Curtis?" she bit out, her patience swiftly waning.
"Right now? I don't know."
Lucia glanced at her father, who nodded. She returned her attention to the weasel before her.
"Look at me, Lord Gareth."
The man shifted his gaze to hers. She concentrated, but found it difficult for a moment to summon her magic. Difficult, but not impossible.
"Tell me the truth. Have you seen your son?"
"Yes,"
Lord Gareth said, the word shooting out of his mouth as swiftly and heavily as a cannonball. His forehead furrowed.
"What did I didn't mean to say that."
Lucia kept his troubled gaze locked with hers, while grappling to hold on to her own magic, which felt like sand slipping from between her fingers.
"When did you see him?"
"Earlier today. He begged for my help. He said he'd been tortured, that Nicola Cassian had burned him, and he confessed to what he'd done to Prince Magnus."
Gareth clamped his mouth shut so hard, his teeth made a crunching sound. Blood began to trickle from his nose. The blood helped. Even a prophesied sorceress could use blood to strengthen her magic.
"Don't try to fight against this," Lucia said.
She couldn't focus on the jarring mention of Nick Cassian right now. That could wait for later.
"What did Curtis confess to you?"
Gareth's face had turned red, nearly purple, as he strained against Lucia's magic.
"He murdered Prince Magnus."
The confirmation was a blow, stealing her breath. She fought to hold on to the magic she used to draw the truth from the Lord's lying lips.
"How?"
"Buried him alive in a nailed wooden box so he would suffer before he died."
Lucia's throat constricted, and her eyes began to sting. It was just as she'd seen during the location spell.
"Where is Curtis now?"
His eyes glazed over, and the blood from his nose dripped to the white marble floor.
"I told the little fool to run, to hide, to protect himself however necessary. That the king's heir wasn't someone to be thrown away like the contents of a chamber pot. That there would be ramifications."
"Yes,"
Lucia said, her expression one of sheer hatred.
"There most definitely will be."
With that, she released her tenuous magical control of the man. He produced a handkerchief from the pocket of his overcoat and wiped at his bloody nose, his gaze frantically moving to Gaius, who had silently listened to his confession. Trembling with outrage, it took every last ounce of Lucia's control not to kill Lord Gareth where he stood.
"I'm glad you've spoken the truth," "Even if it had to be under duress," Gaius said, finally, when all had gone silent. Lord Gareth gasped.
"Your Highness, he's my son. My boy. I fear for his safety, even though I know he's done such horrible and unforgivable things."
The king nodded.
"I understand. I feel the same."
A small muscle in his cheek twitched.
"Felt the same way about Magnus. I know my own reputation for being unforgiving when crossed. I'm not ignorant to the fears I raise in others, and how strongly they would want to avoid punishment.
And I have stood by your side as you've doled out those punishments, approved all until now. And now I must beg you for lenience."
"I understand why you did it. Why you'd wish to help your son. What's done is done."
Lord Gareth straightened his shoulders.
"I am so relieved that you understand my position in this unfortunate matter."
"Yes, I do. I would have done exactly the same."
Lord Gareth let out a shuddery sigh as he clamped his hand down on the king's shoulder.
"Much gratitude, my friend.
However, I find I cannot forgive you."
In one swift motion, Gaius pulled the knife from within his surcoat and sliced it across the lord's throat. Lord Gareth's hands flew to stanch the immediate flow of blood.
"When I find Curtis," the king said, "I promise that he will die very, very slowly. Perhaps he'll even scream for you to save him. I look forward to telling him that you're already dead."
Lucia couldn't say she'd been surprised by her father's actions. In fact, she wholly approved. Lord Gareth fell to the floor by her feet in a growing pool of his own blood, while Lucia and Gaius moved toward the exit. Gaius wiped the bloody blade of his knife on a handkerchief.
"I've wanted to do that since we were only children."
"We will find Curtis without him," Lucia said calmly.
He eyed her.
"You aren't upset by what I just did?"
Did he expect her to feel the same horror of a small girl coming upon a dying cat left for her to find?
"If you hadn't killed him," Lucia said, "I would have."
The look in the King of Blood's gaze then, as his daughter admitted her desire for murder, wasn't one of approval, she thought. It held a whisper of regret.
"So the rumors about you are true," he said solemnly.
She swallowed past the lump that had suddenly formed in her throat.
"Most of them, I'm afraid."
"Good."
He continued to hold her gaze when she wished she could look away.
"Then be a demon, my beautiful daughter. Be whatever you need to be to put an end to the kindred once and for all."
Chapter 10 Cleo Oranus. Her childhood, her family, her hopes and dreams and wishes, all were contained within these golden walls.
"If I pretend hard enough, I can almost believe that it's all been a horrible nightmare."
She said this aloud to Nerissa as her friend brushed the tangles out of her hair before the same mirror where she'd gotten ready for countless parties and banquets in the past. The silver hilt of the brush only served as a painful reminder of a time when Magnus brushed her hair, uncertain whether such a strange act was befitting of a prince, but willing to try because she'd asked him to. He'd loved her hair. She knew this because he'd never failed to mention how annoying it was that she wore it down, rather than pulled back from her face. She'd learned to interpret Magnus's particular way of speaking. He rarely said exactly what was on his mind. But sometimes he did. Sometimes, when it counted the most, he said exactly what was on his mind. Nerissa placed the brush down on the vanity.
"Do you want to pretend it's all been a nightmare?"
"No,"
she answered immediately.
I am here for you, Princess. Whatever you need.
Cleo reached for her friend's hand, squeezing it, wanting something to help anchor her here.
Thank you. Thank you for everything you've done for me. But can you do me one huge favor?
Of course. What is it?
Call me Cleo.
A smile touched Nerissa's lips, and she nodded.
I can do that.
She turned Cleo's hand over, studying the mark on her palm.
The lines haven't changed since we left Persia. I haven't used the water magic again. Not since freezing the guard, she thought, shuddering at the memory.
Have you tried?
Cleo shook her head.
Amara thought I should try to control this magic, but I haven't yet.
She was afraid to try, although she didn't admit this aloud.
And the weather. I'm not even sure I'm responsible for that. Not consciously, anyway.
Storms had followed them from Palsea. Sudden downpours of rain that seemed to correspond to Cleo's darker moments of grief.
What about Taryn?
Nerissa asked.
The lines spreading from his air magic marking are more extensive than yours. They're all the way up his right arm now.
Cleo's gaze snapped to hers.
Really?
Nerissa nodded.
His air magic saved Felix's life. But after that, I don't know if he's been trying to control it. Enzo was worried about him. He's worried about you, too.
Cleo wanted to focus on something else, anything else.
Is Enzo worried about you?
Nerissa gave her a small smile.
Constantly. He's the jealous type, I'm afraid.
He's in love.
That would make only one of us, unfortunately.
She sighed.
He was fun in the beginning, but now he wants something from me that I don't think I can give him.
She visibly grimaced.
Commitment. Perish the thought.
Cleo very nearly laughed out loud at that.
So you're saying that you're not ready to get married and have a dozen babies with him? That would be putting it mildly,
Nerissa replied.
No. Unfortunately, there's someone else on my mind lately. Someone I've come to care about more than I'd like.
Such talk, despite what it meant for poor Enzo, had helped to brighten Cleo's dark mood. It reminded her of a simpler time when she gossiped with her sister about the love lives of their circle of friends.
Who?
Cleo asked.
Do I know him?
Nerissa's smile grew.
Why do you assume it's a him?
Oh. Cleo's eyes widened.
Well, that's certainly a good question, isn't it?
Why would I assume such a thing?
I found in my life that love and attraction can take many forms. And if one is open to unexpected possibilities, there are no boundaries.
That certainly was true, Cleo thought. It had been for her and Magnus.
You're not going to tell me who it is, are you?
No. But don't worry. It's not you, Princess.
Nerissa frowned.
I mean, Cleo. Using your name rather than your title might take some getting used to. Now, I will wish you good night. You need sleep. And tomorrow, if you want to begin channeling this magic within you, I will be readily available to help you practice.
Perhaps,
Cleo allowed. After Nerissa left, Cleo pondered Nerissa's seemingly overcomplicated love life as she tried to fall asleep and think about anything other than Magnus. She failed. The lines spreading out from the water magic symbol on her palm glowed in the darkness, pulsing with the beat of her heart. She pulled up the sleeve of her nightgown and traced her fingers along the lines, like branches of a tree, or veins, or scars. Scars like the one on Magnus's cheek. Cleo forced the thought of his face away from her. It hurt too much to dwell on everything she'd lost. She had to focus on what she still had. this magic, this water goddess residing within her. What did it mean? Could she use it to regain her power?
Magnus would approve of that, she thought.
Unable to sleep, she dressed herself in a light silk cloak in the dead of night and decided to go to the palace library and read until dawn. Certainly, she could find more books about the kindred. She'd glanced at some in the past, but had never paid close enough attention to them. The palace had a scattering of Kratian guards on duty, but not nearly as many as there had been when Amara's occupation had started. Some were stationed in the same places where Iranian guards once stood. They were as still as statues, not seeming to pay her any attention or ask where she was going. It wasn't nearly the same as it had been when she'd been here last. A prisoner of war, forced to marry the conquering king's son, watched closely with every move she made.
I could leave here, she thought. Run away and start a new life. Put this one far behind me.
Cleo scratched her left palm, knowing such thoughts were full of weakness and fear and utter denial. She refused to be weak or fearful. Entering the library, blazing with torchlight even in the wee hours of the night, felt like truly coming home. She'd only recently developed a love of books after ignoring the treasures in this expansive space for most of her life. Thank the goddess that King Gaius had not burned them. The library was even larger than the throne room, with shelves carved from mahogany wood that stretched 30 feet high, with gold ladders to climb in order to obtain books higher than an arm's reach. The titles and scribes of these thousands upon thousands of volumes of story and history were kept in yet another book, one that she remembered trying and failing to decipher one day when the curator wasn't around. Cleo couldn't find that thick ledger tonight, so instead she traced her index finger along hundreds of spines until she found one that called out to her. It was simply titled, Goddess. The brown leather cover had two golden symbols upon it, the symbols for water and earth magic. She opened the book up and held it toward a torch so she could read it easily. It held the accounts of one who was Valoria's personal scribe when she was in power in northern Lemeros 1,000 years ago, and it held sketches of the goddess Cleo had never seen before.
The real truth about Valoria, she mused to herself, or just the personal opinions of some love-struck scribe?
Despite Valoria's rumored sadistic nature, rivaling only that of King Gaius's, she was said to be as eternally beautiful as any immortal who'd ever existed. Still, this book seemed like one worth reading. Cleo tucked the book under her arm, deciding to take it back to her chambers to read more. She and Valoria had one important thing in common, something she couldn't ignore. The Water Kindred. Sleep didn't tug at her yet, so she continued to explore the library. She found an alcove that held a great surprise. On the wall, flanked by two small lanterns, was a portrait of her mother. Cleo hadn't seen this painting in years. She had assumed it had been burned with the rest of the Bellos royal family. The fact that it hadn't been destroyed filled her heart with a sudden burst of joy and relief. Queen Elena Bellos looked so much like Amelia. Cleo wished she'd had a chance to know her. Beneath the portrait was a glass case, similar to the ones that her father had stuffed with the gifts from royal families from overseas who'd come to visit and brought shining treasures from their kingdoms. This cabinet held only one piece. A jeweled dagger. Cleo moved closer, realizing that there was something on the ground. A piece of torn parchment. Unable to stifle her curiosity, she picked up the parchment to find it was a letter written in a feminine hand. Part of it had been ripped away, leaving only a few lines for her to read.
My darling Gaius, I know you must hate me. It always seemed to be that way between us, either love or hate.
but know as I enter this marriage that I do so out of my obligation to my family. I can't turn my back on my mother's wishes. It would have killed her had I run away with you. But I love you. I love you. I love you. I could repeat it 1,000 times, and it would never stop being true. If there were any other way, know that I would... The letter had been torn after that line, and Cleo felt a desperate grief within her in not being able to know more. Her mother wrote this. She wrote this to King Gaius. With a trembling hand, Cleo reached into the case and picked up the dagger. The hilt was encrusted with precious jewels, a beautiful treasure, one that struck her as oddly familiar. Aaron Ligeris, Cleo's former betrothed, had owned a jeweled dagger, but it was not nearly as grand as this. Jonas had kept Aaron's dagger for months after the tragedy at the Palcean market that day, a reminder of losing his brother, a reminder of the vengeance in the rebel's heart. Another dagger came to Cleo's mind then, one that Prince Asher had given to her on her wedding night.
"This is a Christian wedding dagger," she breathed.
"Yes, yes it is." Cleo froze at the sound of King Gaius's voice. She took a deep breath in and straightened her spine.
"You're the one who put it here," she said.
"I gifted that to your mother upon her marriage to your father."
It took her a moment to find her voice.
"What a strange gift from a Lemurian."
"It is, isn't it? I wanted to kill Corvin with it in his sleep."
Cleo turned to glare at him. The king wore a cloak as black as his hair, as dark as his eyes. For a moment, he looked so much like Magnus that it stole her breath.
"If you gave her such a gift," she managed to say, "I can see why she hated you."
"I dropped that letter earlier this evening."
His gaze fell upon it, still clutched in Cleo's hand. And in a single motion, he snatched it away from her.
"If you read it, you know that hate was only one of the emotions she held for me."
The king's attention shifted to the portrait above her.
"Elena kept the dagger. I saw it again in a treasure cabinet like this when I came to visit your father 12 years ago."
Cleo's gaze went to it again.
"Is this the same dagger that Magnus saw during that visit? One so beautiful that he wanted to steal it? And you..."
"Cut him with it," he said bluntly. "Yes, I did. And he bore the scar from that day to remind me of that moment when I lost control of myself. Lost in my grief."
"I can't believe my mother would have ever..."
A pain squeezed her heart, both of grief and outrage.
"She loved my father."
Gaius turned his face away so it became shrouded by shadows.
"I suppose she did in her way. A deeply obedient, devoted to a bloody goddess myopic family way."
His smile turned into a sneer. He studied the portrait now with disdain rather than reverence.
"Elena was a treasure that your father wished to add to his growing collection. Your grandparents were thrilled that the Corso family name, certainly noble but not important enough to earn the right to a villa in the City of Gold, might become truly royal. They accepted the betrothal without even consulting Elena about it first."
Cleo was equal parts thirsty to know more, and appalled by any slight against her beloved father.
"Your mother made it sound like you had fallen for each other much earlier, on the Isle of Lucas. If this was true, why didn't you marry her? You were a prince."
"How clever. Why didn't I think of that?"
Such coldness to his tone, such sarcasm, She flinched from it.
Alas, there were rumors about me even then. Rumors that met with her parents' disapproval. I was tainted, you might say. Dark and unpredictable. Dangerous and violent. They're worried for the safety of their precious daughter.
Rightfully so.
I would never have harmed Elena. I worshipped her.
His dark eyes glittered as he focused on Cleo.
And she knew it. She nearly ran away with me a month before she married him.
She would have denied this very possibility if she hadn't first read the letter.
But she didn't.
No. Instead, I received this message. I wasn't very happy to read it.
That would explain why it had been torn in half. Cleo tried to figure it out.
My grandparents intervened.
My mother intervened.
He scowled.
I see it all now far more clearly than ever before. How much she controlled when it came to her plans for me. Her control over me.
Celia spoke to my grandparents. Warned them?
No. After I received this,
his grip on the parchment tightened.
My mother saw how distraught I'd become. How distracted and obsessed. She knew I would never give Elena up. So she had your grandparents murdered.
What?
Cleo gasped.
I know they died years before I was born, but I was never told how.
Some feel that painful tales are best kept from innocent ears. They were killed by an assassin sent by Queen Celia de Mora herself. Until that moment, I believe there was still a chance that Elena would walk away from the wedding to be with me instead. But in her grief, Elena believed the rumors that I was the one behind this act. She married Corvin and made it clear that she hated me. I didn't take the rejection well, so I did what any fool would do. I became everything she thought I was.
Cleo's mind reeled.
So you weren't always
evil and sadistic?
The small, cold smile returned.
I was never kind, at least not to those who didn't deserve it, and very few did. This, however, it worked exactly as my mother wished. I tried not to care when I heard of your sister's birth. I tried not to give a damn again about anything to do with Elena.
He snorted softly.
Then one day I received another letter from her. She wanted to see me again. Even heavy with her second child. She asked me to visit the following month. But the following month I learned she was dead.
Cleo's throat felt thick. For a moment she couldn't even attempt to speak. The king's gaze locked on the painted eyes of Queen Elena Belos.
My mother found out about my plans to see her again, and she intervened. And for years I believed her lies about the witch's curse, and that you were the one who killed her. I supposed I wanted to believe it.
He let out a pained snarl.
My mother destroyed my entire life, and I allowed it.
She wanted the Fire Kindred to use your body as a host. Not Nick's.
Cleo had been trying to rationalize this since it had happened.
If she wanted ultimate power for you, had planned it all her life, that doesn't make any sense.
King Gaius nodded.
I agree. What happened was not according to Celia de Mora's plan. But I know my mother enough to know that she would have found a way to shift control back to me. Back to her.
Cleo's mind was in turmoil over everything the king had shared. She went over what he'd just said.
If you believe that, do you think there's a way to bring Nick back?
He sneered. I don't know, nor do I care about that boy's fate.
I care, she said. My mother is dead. My father and sister are dead. My dear friend Mira is dead, and now Magnus is dead.
Her voice broke, and a layer of frost suddenly began to spread across the walls in the alcove.
But Nick isn't, not yet. And if there's something I can do to help him, then I have to try.
King Gaius eyed the icy walls uneasily.
Are you doing that with water magic?
Cleo's hand shook, but she held them out in front of her. The glowing, spidery blue lines had begun to spread over her wrists.
I can't control it.
Don't try to control it, he said, or it will kill you.
What do you care?
She spat. Gaius's eyebrows drew together. He looked pained.
Magnus loved you. He fought for you. He defied me again and again in order to save you, even if it meant his own destruction. He was worthy of you in a way that I was never worthy of Elena. I see that now. And for that alone, you must survive this Cleona Bellos.
Then he scowled at her.
But know this. I would personally kill you in an instant if it meant that my son could live again.
Cleo didn't have a chance to reply before the king walked away, swallowed by the darkness of the library. Chapter 11. Magnus. Palcia. When Magnus and Asher returned to the walled royal compound by way of the Imperial Road, they found it all but deserted. Amara and half her soldiers had set sail for Cretia. King Gaius and a handful of others, including Cleo, had left for the Uranian Palace.
Do you think we can trust what he says?
Asher asked.
Oh, I don't know.
Magnus pressed the blade he'd stolen harder against the Cretian guard's throat. The guard had been patrolling outside the gates when Magnus and Asher grabbed him and dragged him behind a thatch of thorny bushes out of sight of other guards.
He seems sincere enough.
The guard's eyes moved wildly between them.
I wouldn't lie. Not to you, Your Highness. I don't believe your sister's accusations about you.
Magnus sent a sidelong look toward his companion.
I don't think he's addressing me.
Asher stepped closer.
Amara has accused me of horrible crimes against my family and against the Empire itself.
And many refuse to believe her. Your sister doesn't deserve to ascend to Empress. You are the rightful Emperor of Cretia. Say the word, and I will give my life for yours.
No,
Asher said, a shadow crossing his gray-blue eyes.
I want no one else to sacrifice themselves for me. I don't want the royal scepter my sister desires more than anything else. I never have. Tell me more about Princess Cleona,
Magnus growled at the guard.
Did Curtis Cirillo return here?
Is she safe? I only saw her briefly when she left with the king's entourage. Lord Curtis hasn't been heard from in days.
Magnus already knew what had happened during the ritual. After the shocking realization that the Fire Kindred now resided within the body of Nick Cassian, Asher had filled him in on what had happened to Cleo. He needed to get to her, to see for himself if she was suffering in any way from this unexpected affliction. Magnus always believed her to be a goddess. He just never thought she'd become a literal one.
There's nothing here for us,
Magnus growled, pulling his blade away from the guard's throat.
Let's leave.
Your Highness,
the guard ventured.
Will you stay? Will you lead us against your sister?
Asher didn't respond to the guard. Instead, he turned his back and kept pace with Magnus as they left the compound. No one followed them.
Fool,
Magnus muttered. Asher glanced at him.
Are you referring to me?
You have great power within your grasp, and you consciously choose to ignore it."
The Kreatian prince clenched his jaw for a moment before replying,
"I don't want to be emperor." "Just because you don't have a craving for an apple doesn't mean you need to upend an entire cart of them out of spite."
Why did he even care to comment? Amara and her lust for power didn't register as important for him at the moment. All he wanted was to get to the Iranian palace. That was as far into the future as he currently thought. They'd walked along the Imperial Road for hours in silence. It would lead them through the wildlands and into Aranis without the risk of being seen at the docks of Traitor's Harbor. For every guard who might claim loyalty to Prince Asher, Magnus knew there were a dozen more who'd been commanded by Amara to kill him on sight. Magnus washed the remainder of the dirt off himself in the first body of water they came upon. Since it was Pelsea, it was a thin, muddy river. He hated this place. Finally, Asher spoke again.
"Are you curious at all about what I do want?"
"I hope you're going to say a pair of horses," Magnus replied. "Or even better, a horse-drawn carriage."
"I want to find a witch."
Magnus eyed him.
"A witch?"
Asher nodded.
"I've asked around to see whether there is one in this land who has enough power to be of help to us, and there is. She's rumored to be an exiled watcher who has retained her magic. She lives in solitude, hiding the extent of her magic from the world."
"Rumors and feathers," Magnus muttered.
"What?"
"Both usually hold very little weight." He shook his head. "It's an old Lemurian saying."
"I was told by a Pelsian woman I met when we were in Basilia that there is a tavern in Aranos where I can find more answers and learn how to contact Valia. We will pass this tavern on our way to the city."
"Valia," Magnus repeated. "You even have a name."
"I will seek her out by myself if I must."
"And then what? What exactly do you expect if you do find her, and she isn't some common witch who can barely light a candle with her weak elementia? Do you think she's going to have any more effect on Cayan than Lucia would?"
"Lucia won't have any effect on Cayan.
Your sister is as useful in helping us to save Nicola as Amara would be."
Magnus stopped walking, turning to face Asher.
"I believe in Lucia. I'll never stop believing that she will return to us and do what is right."
Asher cocked his head.
"You choose to live in a dream when it comes to your sister.
Lucia has shown us all what she wants to do, and it's to help Cayan."
Fury rose within Magnus in an instant.
"You're wrong."
Asher studied him, frustration in his blue-gray eyes.
"Where was your sister last night when Cayan was about to burn you? To make you into his slave? Did she magically appear to save you?"
"She doesn't give a damn about you anymore, Magnus.
Perhaps she never did."
Magnus really didn't mean to hit Asher as hard as he did. But he hit him anyway. Asher covered his nose as it gushed blood with one hand and shoved Magnus back with the other.
"I think you broke my nose, you Basanyug!"
"Good. You were too perfect-looking before. It'll give you some character."
Magnus started walking again.
"I'm going to assume Basanyug doesn't mean good friend."
"It's creation for the arse of a pig!"
He nodded.
"Fitting. Don't dare hit me ever again!"
Asher growled.
"Don't speak ill of my sister again, and I won't have to," he snapped back. "Lucia will return. She will help us. She won't side with Cayan again, not after she sees what he's done."
When it came to his sister, Magnus needed to believe this more than anything else. Their progress along the Imperial Road was far too slow and tried Magnus's patience, but they finally entered Aranis. Asher's tales of this witch named Valia
had piqued his interest, though he'd never admit it. Not far from the Temple of Cleona and the end of the Imperial Road, they came upon the village and the tavern that Asher sought. Magnus didn't care about the name of it, only that it might serve wine and good food along with the answers Asher wanted. The pair entered the busy tavern and took a seat at a table in a dark corner. They ordered food and drink from a barmaid. Asher drew the girl closer.
"I'm looking for someone," he said.
She gave him a flirtatious smile and twisted a piece of dark hair around her finger.
"You found her?"
"That's not exactly what I mean, lovely girl,"
he whispered something in her ear. She nodded.
"I'll see if he's here, handsome."
When she walked away, Magnus regarded Asher with bemusement.
"The world's most sought-after unmarried prince who can have anyone he wants cares only for Niccolo Cassian."
Asher met Magnus's gaze without flinching.
"You wouldn't understand."
"Likely not," he agreed. Not long after, the girl brought them roast chicken and a bottle of wine from Agalon Vineyards. Magnus glared at the etched marking for a moment before he uncorked it and took a deep drink, squeezing his eyes shut to allow the sweet liquid to move over his tongue and down his throat.
"I didn't think Lemurians drank inebriants," Asher said. "They don't," Magnus replied. "Except for the ones that do."
He scanned the tavern with impatience and suspicion, waiting for one of its patrons to approach them, ready to fight or kill. But every one of them minded their own business, filing out after their meals, drunk and full.
"Amusing," Magnus said dryly.
"What is?"
Asher asked.
"Aranians have survived very nicely, given all that has transpired in Mitica this last year. They're still hedonists to their very core. People have different ways of dealing with adversities. It doesn't mean they're happy. Ignorance is happiness."
"Then let's toast to ignorance."
Asher raised his goblet. After a moment, Magnus raised his bottle.
"And to my sister Amara," he continued, "who can rot in what Mitikans call the Darklands, if such a place exists, where she has surely earned her spot for leaving us with such a mess to clean up."
Magnus nodded.
"I'll drink to that."
A man approached their table from across the busy tavern. He had white hair, a lined face, and an impossibly wide smile.
"You asked to speak with me," the man said.
"You're Bruno?"
Asher asked. Bruno nodded, his smile growing even wider.
"Not just one, but two princes in my tavern this evening. How utterly marvellous. I wish my son were here to see this."
"Quiet, you fool,"
Magnus snarled, scanning the area to see if anyone overheard.
"Why should I be quiet about such an honor?"
"Kindly lower your voice,"
Asher said.
"Oh, your accent is just as delightful as they say it is, your grace. My goodness, yes, lovely, just lovely."
Magnus placed the edge of his blade against the man's wrist.
"I said, be quiet."
Bruno looked down, his white eyebrows high.
"Of course, your highness."
"I was told that you might have information," Asher said, "about how to contact a woman named Valia."
"Valia,"
Bruno said, nodding.
"Yes, I know her."
"I need to speak with her."
"Valia doesn't speak with just anyone. She values her privacy."
"She's an exiled watcher? One who's retained her magic?"
Magnus asked in a hushed tone, still resistant to this possibility. Bruno's pleasant expression grew warier.
"What interest do you have in contacting Valia?"
"I need to know if her magic might help to save a friend of mine,"
Asher said.
"Save them from what?"
"From the fire, kindred."
Bruno twisted his hands, his face paling.
One shouldn't speak aloud of such legends. The hawks may hear us."
He peered out the window next to them into the midday sunshine.
"Faulia hates the hawks, you know. They're a favorite meal, roasted with sour panberries. I think it's because of what happened to her hands, you see, although she would never admit such a thing."
Asher let out a small grunt of frustration.
"How do I contact her?" "Through you. If you seek Valya, she will know."
He shrugged.
"But she'll also respond to a blood sacrifice along with the recited summoning."
Magnus pushed his empty bottle of wine away from him.
"I think we're done here."
"What kind of summoning?"
Asher persisted.
"Does she live in this village? Will you let her know I'm seeking her help?" "I haven't seen Valya in years. Frankly, I have no idea where she is now. But if you do the blood ritual and the summoning properly, and she is curious, she will come forth."
Bruno turned to Magnus, his smile returning, especially now that Magnus had sheathed his blade.
"I saw you on your wedding tour. You and the princess made quite the pair. A portrait of light and dark, night and day. The Prince of Blood and the beautiful Golden Princess. A stunning couple, truly."
He shook his head.
"It's a memory I treasure to this day, despite how much I despise your evil father."
"Asher," Magnus said with an impatient sigh.
"I'm going to the palace now. Are you going to join me, or do you wish to call out names while sacrificing random forest creatures?"
"You don't believe," Asher said. "What I believe is irrelevant. What I need is to get to Cleo." "I've heard a recent rumor about you, Prince Magnus," Bruno said. "I'm so pleased to see it's not true."
"Oh? And what is it?"
"That you're dead."
Bruno cocked his head.
"You look very well for a dead man."
Magnus brushed his fingers over the ring on his left hand.
"Asher."
Asher stood up, his face etched in doubt.
"Yes, I'm coming with you. I can't waste time chasing after useless stories. And that's what this sounds like to me."
Magnus heard the pained disappointment in the prince's voice. He couldn't help but feel it himself. There would be no simple solution to this puzzle. It had become a giant, complicated ice maze in which one might freeze to death before they ever found their way out. But Magnus still believed in Lucia, and he believed in Cleo. That would have to be enough. Chapter 12. Lucia. Uranus. Ever since drawing the truth from Lord Gareth's lying mouth yesterday, Lucia felt more of her magic slipping away. She barely slept last night, thinking about how to solve this crushing problem. Other than draining Jonas of more of his strange magic, which would possibly kill him the next time, she came up with no solid answer. Even Lys's nursemaid noticed the strain and worry on Lucia's face, and told her to go outside and get some sunshine and fresh air. Instead of ignoring her, Lucia decided to do as suggested. She had enjoyed the palace courtyard the last time she'd been there, relished in walking its mosaic pathway through the olive and willow trees and beautiful flower gardens tended daily by a full roster of talented gardeners. The sound of buzzing bees, the chirp of songbirds, and the warm Iranian sun on her face calmed her. It wasn't home, but it would have to do for now. The king said they would stay at the Iranian palace until he found Curtis, who, perhaps, might return to the palace seeking his father's assistance.
So be it.
From the pocket of her gown, she pulled out the amber orb that had once been Cayenne's prison. After he'd taken corporeal form, he had kept this with him, until the magic from her ring had destroyed that form. This orb was a value to the Fire Kindred. And it was a threat to him. but only if Lucia could summon the full strength of her magic to imprison him again. While seated upon a stone bench in the center of the courtyard, she held the small crystal sphere in the palm of her hand and tried to levitate it with air magic. Lucia concentrated, gritting her teeth with the effort, but nothing happened. She failed again and again to shift the object even a fraction.
"Oh, goddess," she thought with growing panic. "My magic is completely gone."
"Lucia!" The sound of Cleo's voice made her jump, and she quickly tucked the amber orb back into her pocket.
"Apologies if I startled you," Cleo said, wringing her hands.
"Not at all," Lucia lied, managing a tight smile.
"Good morning."
Cleo didn't reply. She simply stood there, studying Lucia nervously. She wore a lovely blue gown today with orange and yellow flowers embroidered along the hem of the skirt. Lucia would have envied her for it in the past. Lemurians, even royalty, rarely wore bright colors. Lucia's mother had always insisted on looking proper, polished, and well-tailored, provided the colors one wore were gray, black, or olive green. Yet Lucia had always been drawn to brighter colors. She had hated Lady Sabine Amalius, her father's former mistress, but envied her ability to wear red. While it was the official color of Lemaris, such a color rarely found its way onto the clothing of anyone but a palace guard.
"Perhaps I should have confiscated Sabina's wardrobe after I murdered her," Lucia mused.
It seemed so long ago. Her first burst of uncontrollable magic that had led to a death. How horrible Lucia had felt about it at the time. But that was then, and this was now.
"That is a beautiful gown," she said.
Cleo looked down at herself, as if just realizing what she wore.
"This is the work of Lorenzo Tavera. He has a dress shop in Hawk's Brow."
Lucia found she didn't care about such things anymore. Not really. No. Now that Cleo was right in front of her, she had much more important subjects on her mind. Her gaze moved to Cleo's left hand, the one that bore the water magic symbol. She'd seen the same symbol 1,000 times on statues of the goddess Valoria. To see it in reality, on the palm on the Iranian princess, felt rather surreal. There were more markings on Cleo's skin. Thin, branching blue lines that extended from the water symbol itself. At first glance, they appeared like veins visible through translucent skin, but they were far more ominous than that.
"I need your help," Cleo said simply.
Something caught in Lucia's chest. Something cold and hard and tight.
"Do you?"
she replied. Cleo bit her bottom lip, her eyes cast downward.
"I know you hate me for what I did. I convinced you we were friends, and you allowed me to take part in the awakening ritual. When you confronted me about telling Jonas where to find the crystals, I denied it."
Lucia watched her carefully, surprised by the words coming out of her mouth. Cleo blinked hard as she crossed her arms tightly over her chest.
"I did only what I felt like I had to do to survive. But know this. I had come to value you as a friend, Lucia. If it had been another world, another lifetime, perhaps we could have been just that without any difficulties. But instead, I betrayed your trust for my own gain. And I truly apologize for hurting you."
Lucia found herself momentarily at a loss for words.
"You mean this?"
Cleo nodded.
"With all my heart."
Lucia had been terribly hurt by the betrayal, and she'd reacted the only way she knew how, with anger and violence. She'd nearly killed Cleo that day, just before she'd foolishly run away with Alexius. Cleo had always seemed so perfect, so effortlessly beautiful, so poised. A girl who drew everyone's eye and appreciation. So very different from Lucia. A part of her had wanted to destroy this small, golden piece of perfection. especially when it became clear that Magnus had begun to take interest in her. Was it jealousy Lucia had felt? Not romantic jealousy, certainly. Lucia had never loved Magnus as more than a brother. But all her life, she'd had his full attention and possessed his whole heart. Magnus had belonged only to her until Cleo came into their lives.
No wonder I've hated her all this time, Lucia thought with shocked realization.
She reached out a hand to the other princess.
Let me see your mark.
Cleo hesitated a moment before taking a seat next to the sorceress and holding out her left hand. Lucia studied the water magic symbol and the lines branching out from it, her brows drawn together in concentration.
The magic is unpredictable,
Cleo said, her voice hushed now.
And so powerful. It can control the weather. It can create sheets of ice out of nothing at all. It can freeze a man to death.
Lucia quickly looked up at Cleo, searching the other princess's face for the truth.
You killed someone with this water magic, she said.
Cleo nodded.
A guard who had helped to torture Magnus.
Lucia's grip on Cleo's hand increased.
I hope you made him suffer. That's just it. I didn't try to do anything at all. It just happened. The magic manifests when I'm angry or sad or in pain. I can feel it. Cool and bottomless within my skin. But I can't seem to control it. When it does manifest, are these lines the only side effect? My nose bled the first time, but not since. These lines appeared, yes. And I also have nightmares, but I'm not sure if they're related. Nightmares that I'm drowning, and not only when I'm asleep. Sometimes I feel like I'm drowning in the middle of the day.
Lucia pondered this for a moment. In the beginning, her magic was also overpowering, lashing out when her emotions became erratic.
So you want my help, she began. To rid yourself of this affliction?
No, Cleo said without hesitation.
I want your help to learn how to control it.
Lucia shook her head.
Cleo, do you realize what this is? This isn't a simple and accessible thread of water magic that could be contained within a common witch, or even within me,
or at least how Lucia had been for a short time before her pregnancy.
You have the water kindred inside you, a thinking, feeling entity that wants to gain full control over your body, like how Kaya now controls Nick. The water kindred wants to live, to exist, and to experience life. And you're the only one now standing in its way.
Cleo's expression turned stubborn.
I've been reading more about Valoria in a book I found in the palace library. She also had the water and earth kindred within her, but she could control that magic at will. Valoria was an immortal, created from magic itself,
Lucia explained.
You are mortal, flesh and blood, and vulnerable to pain and injury.
Cleo's eyes grew glossy, and her grip on Lucia's hand tightened.
You don't understand.
She looked down at the water symbol.
I have to figure out how to use it. I have to save Nick and my kingdom. My sister. My father. They told me to be strong, but I...
She drew in a ragged breath.
I don't know if I can be strong much longer. What I've always believed about my family, about my mother and father and the love they shared.
Her voice broke.
Everything has fallen away into ruin and I'm lost. Without this magic, I have nothing left. Without this magic, I am nothing.
Lucia had hated Cleo for so long for reasons she'd all but forgotten. But the princess's pain tugged on a heart she'd thought had turned hard and black months ago.
You're not nothing, she said firmly. You are Cleona Aurora Bellis, and you are going to survive this.
You're going to survive, because I know my brother would have wanted you to.